Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report. It's just me watching our democracy crumble around us, ensconced in my big abandoned, echoey, possibly haunted building. But today we do have a special guest for you, returning once again, the host of the Rashad Ritchie Morning Show, Rashad Ritchie. How's it going?
Man, I'm glad to be with you, man. Democracy is crumbling, but we got each other.
We do, we do. And by the way, so you know, normally when I introduce someone, I introduce them based on like, because a lot of these people have shows of their own, and I want to make sure that people know about it so they can go support it. But it's not like you don't have a bunch of other things that should probably be in that intro. We were talking before the show, how many degrees are you pursuing in 2020 exactly?
You know, I pursue one degree at a time. So I just finished my second doctorate at Clark Atlanta University. So I have two doctorates. I'm a college professor, been a college professor since 2016, but I'm currently in law school, John. I'm in law school because Trump made me do it. This guy has woken something in me, right? To where now I feel being an advocate, being a better advocate for me means I need to get this law degree. I'm in the middle of midterms right now, but when you asked me to come to your show, I had to do it. Yeah, so it's one degree at a time.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. And look, that's very inspirational. I actually left a doctoral program at UT Austin. I was working on a political psychology degree to come here. And it depresses me sometimes to think that probably the smartest I ever was is in the rearview mirror. And like, I'm just coasting away from that education. Maybe someday. Maybe
education is all inside your mind, man. These degrees mean very little, John. All right. It's what's inside of you, and you are a learned individual, and you are a chief educator in my book.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, anyway, look, the education that you've put together for yourself, including the law degree that you're working on, certainly seems like it is going to come in handy for some of the news we have today and some of what's likely to develop politically in the near future. So I'm glad that we have you to lend your expertise to us. We have a lot that we're going to be talking about today. Not only, you know, the future of our what passes for democracy. Will we even have those vestiges in the future? We've got protests following the lack of charges against the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. We've got just a bunch of stuff. So you're not going to want to miss it. Thankfully, you're already here. That's a great first step. But if you'd like company, and I know I would, please hit the like button, consider sharing the stream, whether you're watching on YouTube or Twitch or literally anywhere else. I don't know. Are we on Snapchat? It's possible. Anything's possible. Share it and let people know that we're active. And if you send us comments or super chats or tweets or bonks or you poke us, I don't know, are people poking these days? Put us in your fave five, then we will respond to that, Rashad and I, as we go along. And hopefully we can get through Hell World 2020 together. With that, Rashad, you ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Okay. You have to give Trump one thing. He is trying to destroy American democracy. That's true. But at least he's not hiding it. He is being very open about it. Take a look at this interaction from a press conference just yesterday.
Real quickly, win, lose, or draw in this election, will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election? And there has been rioting in Louisville, there's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're gonna have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
Mr. President, the second question is, will you
please go ahead.
Okay, so there's a lot that's abhorrent and offensive and deeply worrying in that, but I want to really focus on the money quote there, that within a couple of hours, Kayleigh McEnany will be doing her best to pretend he didn't say what he said. So let's focus in on the most worrying part of what you just saw.
Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
There won't be a transfer. There will be a continuation. That's what he said. Now, look, it's not like he hasn't said things like this, Rashad, but this seems like the clearest, most concise version of the no matter what happens, you're getting Donald Trump in 2021 that we've had so far.
Yes, it is concise. And here's what he's doing, John. He's setting the Supreme Court in a way, and that's why Ginsburg comes back into play even in this commentary from Donald J. Trump. He's setting the Supreme Court up in a way so that this election will ultimately be decided by the US Supreme Court, not by voters, okay? He does this often where he plants the seed, he allows the seed to take root, his base then promotes this seed. The idea that somehow voting by mail or voting by way of absentee is not relevant or credible is an idea that he started planting months ago. Now you're seeing this evolve into basically a legal strategy for what his team will use in order to invalidate the election. He is not a complex soul. This guy is not full of complex ideas. He's a pretty cause and effect individual. He says, these are going to be the issues. And then all of a sudden, everybody around him says, oh, this is the issue. So that's exactly what's happening here. So Ginsburg plays into this because Donald J. Trump is setting up the US Supreme Court to ultimately decide the presidential election. Okay, and he's going to claim that based on the rule of law, based on our democracy, the US Supreme Court is the final word. And he will technically be true. But he is setting the entire stage for a victory by way of Supreme Court. Now, why is that important? Because the legal battle will be launched per state. Each state will have a legal battle, and watch, these states will typically be swing states or states that are Republican, but he lost to Joe Biden. I do predict Joe Biden will win some purple and red states by way of total vote count. He is attempting to create the mindset to allow the Supreme Court, his justices that he chooses, to allow that to permeate not only to the audience of voters, but also give political safety to the Republican senators and the Supreme Court justices who may be willing to vote this guy back in.
I think you are only like 155% right. So much so that I think combined with what you just said and what I saw earlier today of Lindsey Graham, he was asked about this comment. And he sort of wormily said, no, we're gonna have a peaceful transfer of power. The court will decide and we'll know. Wait, what are you talking about? This is America. The court doesn't decide who wins the election except in 2000. The people decide. No moving the goalpost to just, it's inevitably going to get to the court. And so we're going to give him whoever he wants with a litmus test for giving him the election. No, we're not doing that. So there's two laws now for the 2020 election. The first is it's not election day, it's election week. Get ready, tell your friends, tell your neighbors. It's gonna take a bit to know exactly what the returns were. We might be lucky and Joe Biden might blow him away, and so we might get it on the first day, but prep yourself for an extra day or two of count. That is not the apocalypse. That is not justification for Republicans stealing the election. It just might happen because it's 2020, we're in a pandemic and things are falling apart. And the second rule is the court is not going to decide who wins, it's the people. Now, I'm saying that more as a warning than an actual like truth, because in the end, that's what they want to happen. They want it to be the court, but we need to insist that the people's vote is actually what counts. And that's gonna play into one of the stories that we talk about a little bit later on. Really fast, it's just crazy that he said that there won't be a transfer, there will be a continuation because we're gonna get rid of the mail-in ballots. And do you know what the next question to him was from another reporter? I don't know, it was some random thing, but it wasn't a follow-up about that. And indeed, no follow-up came. That room was filled to whatever, you know, social distancing allows with professional journalists who are way better at this than me. And yet nobody thought, hey, wait a second, it sounds like you just said you're gonna steal the election. Can we like go back to that a little bit?
And
the
guy who asked
the first question did. Oh no, continue.
Yeah, it sounds like a plan. I mean, the way he said it sounds as if they've already strategized exactly how this is going to work out. When you hear him say, yeah, so once we do this, then this is what's going to happen. It will be a continuance. That to me sounds like a strategy that you've already vetted and you have other people working on this program now for you.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I also want to talk about in the wake of the no transfer comment from Trump that we, again, we can't be shocked by it because he's been saying that, but we do need to take it seriously, is that we need to understand that many, many people are not taking it seriously. This comment or the fact that this is the 80th time he's publicly said that he plans to steal the election. There's a tweet out by Ben Shapiro earlier today that was like, well, he certainly shouldn't have said it, but let's be clear, the coup narrative is entirely made up by the media. Well, maybe not entirely. I mean, he did just say that he's not going to transfer power. That seems like maybe you should factor that in. And you have tweets like this. Now look, I'm not one of the people that loves to just rag on Nate Silver constantly. I appreciate his analysis in some cases, even though I'm a progressive, so he hates my guts. But he tweeted this literally a couple of hours before Trump's comment, saying, it seems like the mood among some of the blue check marks here has drifted a bit too liberally from, quote, there's a plausible chance of some very bad outcomes, which is true, to quote, Trump is for sure going to steal the election and you're all sheeple for thinking otherwise. But dude, like 2 hours later, Trump said no transfer. Maybe listen to us. I'm not saying you're sheeple, and I don't say for sure, and I apologize for being a blue check mark, but maybe we should take this seriously. And maybe it would be a good thing if all of the most renowned, respected members of our political elite and media elite and, you know, legal elite were to take this seriously and get ready for it, because it's gonna be an exciting November in all the wrong ways.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Is happening, John. You have individuals who are credible, they are smart, they are brilliant, but they have normalized the behavior of the president. They have become apologists to his extreme rhetoric. And every time they say, well, he didn't really mean that, and then he does the thing that they didn't think he would do, instead of checking him and bringing their party back into alignment with the platforms of the Republican agenda, instead of checking him, John, they decide to expand the moral compass, and they keep expanding the moral compass. And every time this guy does this to them, I'm talking about to the conservative brand, he takes away the soul of the Republican Party, if they ever had one. And at some point, you will be in a post-Trump era, and I'm talking about Republicans. You will be in a post-Trump era, however, because of what you allow Trump to do to your brand, you will never live it down. It will take decades before people forgive you of this. This guy is not the people's champion. The vast majority of Americans never supported him in the first place. They absolutely don't support him now. You will not be on the right side of history. You're not even on the right side of the present.
That's good. I like that. That's good. Yeah, you're totally right. So many people, they just don't get it. They still think that this is the 80s. They really do. They really do. I look at basically every Dem leader is like, if he does these unprecedented things, then he'll pay someday in an election, I guess. So I'm not gonna do anything, but our voters maybe will make him pay. That's not gonna save our democracy. It's just not going to. It's not just Trump, of course. In response to that unprecedented comment about the transfer of power, Republicans brush aside Trump's dismissal of a peaceful transfer. They're not worried about it. Oh, really? Is Mitch McConnell not worried about it? That's a shock. I might faint, actually. Hold on. No, I'm good. Okay, that was close. Here's the thing, man. Like, the vast majority of people that do the sort of job that Rashad and I do, which at least in this, he has other jobs. This is the only thing I do, is that I open my mouth and I make noises at a mic. All we want is to be right or feel right, but I'm really not like that. I'm a political masochist. There's nothing I like more than being wrong. I wanted my predictions in 2016 to be wrong. It just didn't work out that way. I want these predictions about how the election is gonna go to be wrong. But wanting it doesn't make it so. And you can't just say we're being hyperbolic. You know, when Trump went to a rally and he said, I say we slow down the testing, and I freaked out. They freaked out not at Trump, but at people like me saying, oh, come on, it's just a rally. He's just saying that. And then they've manipulated the CDC in any number of different ways. They did actually reduce the testing for a significant period of time. I wanna be wrong, but in 2020, I don't get to be about anything that truly matters.
We're talking about a guy who manipulated the Weather Channel.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
A guy who's willing to manipulate the Weather Channel. There is nothing this individual will not do to remain in power. To me, it is not a possibility that Trump will fight his electoral and popular vote defeat. It is not an if, it is not a possibility. It is a win. It is a, at what point will his team start filing the lawsuits to kick this to the Supreme Court?
100%, 100%. I'm glad that you brought that up. We, in our video intro to the show, like we have our last bit of it. The last couple seconds of it is usually it's Trump doing something crazy, hugging the flag or something like that. And we've left it as him holding up the Sharpied weather map for a long time, because how do you beat that? Once you start sharpieing a hurricane path, anything's up for grabs.
Everything, man. And I mean that literally, right? You sat down and you drew on a scientific document in order to have the ability to say you're right when you were completely wrong about this group or this area having an impact from the storm.
Yeah.
First of all, who cares that you were possibly wrong about that detail that nobody in history would have remembered, except for the fact you popped out a Sharpie in order to lie, right?
And he didn't even choose the same color Sharpie.
I know, man.
Big you're not even Sharpie good sniffing at it. Idiot. Listen, God.
Call me old school, but I'm waiting, John, to get back to the day when a politician lies to me and I believe it. You understand what I mean? We have long gone from those days. There is no ambiguity anymore about the lie. And I get calls all the time from conservatives, Republicans, Trump supporters who call my show. And if you get them in the right debate, John, they will admit, they will admit they know Trump lies. And then they will say, but this, right? That's the problem.
Yeah. I think a lot of Americans have been sniffing that Sharpie. And unfortunately, there's no putting the cap back on that. That's what I worry about.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Trump is getting ready to potentially dispute the outcome of the election via the Supreme Court, but that is not the only iron he has in this fascist. You also have what was revealed by great reporting done by The Atlantic, with The Atlantic's Barton Gellman reporting that the Trump campaign has been discussing, quote, contingency plans to bypass the election results and appoint local electors in battleground states where Republicans hold the legislative majority. Citing the president's baseless claims of fraud, Team Trump could ask GOP-controlled state governments to choose electors, completely ignoring an unfavorable or uncertain popular vote, state and national Republican sources told Gelman. A Trump campaign legal advisor said to The Atlantic, the state legislatures will say, all right, we've been given this constitutional power. We don't think the results of our own state are accurate. So here's our slate of electors that we think properly reflects the results of our state. We've got more, but they are openly discussing this with journalists that hypothetically, if one of these battleground states, many of which, by the way, do have Republican state legislators, most of them have Republicans in control of both houses of the state legislature, that they could say, hey, you know, something, something, mail-in ballots, it's probably inaccurate. So we're going to choose what we think the result should have been. And if you think that won't favor the Republicans, you've been sniffing that Sharpie too. So I know that this is sort of new reporting, Rashad, but how concerned are you about this as a potential strategy going forward?
Well, of course, if they can get away with it, they'll do it. Now, every state will not fit the matrix for this plan to work, but they will find a few states that may be on board. There's a lot of political maneuvering with this kind of issue. But what's interesting about what they're attempting to do, communist nations have done something similar like this before as well. So while the pro-Trump people may say they're anti-communist, they are adopting a lot of pro-communist political methodology in order to retain and exhibit power. I do not put it past the Trump administration to not only talk about doing it, but then sell it to the people of that particular state.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I don't know how likely this is. I'm looking as an outsider. It does seem a little bit more likely when, like, it's one thing to have sources on this, but when some of them are willing to name themselves, for instance, Lawrence Tabas, chairman of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania, says, I've mentioned it to them, and I hope they're thinking about it too. It is one of the available legal options set forth in the Constitution. That's Pennsylvania. That's one of the, it's like there's a 30% chance, a 31% chance that that will be the tip over state for a Biden win. And they're saying the chairman of the Republicans in that state says, no, no, I really hope that they're thinking about overturning this thing. But in terms of the stakes, hypothetically, it's legal, I guess. But what is a democracy if you can do that? If you just say, oh, you know, we had an election and we need one state to flip the way we want, so we're just gonna do whatever we want. I get that maybe I could be hyperbolic. Maybe I'm in a bubble, feel free to let me know. But it doesn't seem hyperbolic to say that we don't have a democracy at that point, that it is just up to one party to choose how long they'd like to stay in power.
And John, I would argue, have we ever truly had a democracy as it relates to the presidential election? We have had this antiquated electoral college system, a slave era system meant to empower southern states to give them more influence over national politics because they owned slaves. So the slave was counted, but was not counted at the same time. That was the genesis of our electoral college system. The problem that we face, what Trump is now exposing, is that our democracy has been flimsy since day one. But we've had, you know, relatively decent individuals who were not willing to take the democracy all the way to this point. As you said, John, the strategy and the implication is actually technically legal, even though it violates every sentiment we know and understand about democracy. So shame on us as a nation for keeping around these laws with the expressed intent of doing one thing. And that is at some point to limit the impact of the voter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you acknowledged, like, we have had people that were good enough. Obviously, in a lot of ways, many of our political leaders have been absolute monsters, been horrific monsters. We won't be taught that in school, but they've been monsters, you know, Trail of Tears, Jim Crow, everything. But they have respected the norms. And that's all a lot of it is. It's norms. I mean, everything from the filibuster to this, to not doing this, that I guess along the way they could have done it. They haven't done most of these things.
Well, most of them were institutionalists. Most of them were institutionalists. They could be wrong with politics. Many of them were racist and bigoted and sexist and everything else. But they were institutionalists where they did not feel as if violating the essence of that institution was appropriate. Now you're getting into a phase in politics where individuals are more Trumpist than institutionalist. Yeah. So Trump is creating a new doctrine of political reality in America.
Yeah, you're 100% right. That's one of the things that makes it scariest. It's not How far are they willing to take this? And we have to believe pretty far. Actually, I want to turn to one example of that. So one of the things that I've said for a bit is that, well, not just me, let's be fair, a lot of people are concerned about this, is that one strategy for Trump going forward is we know there's going to be this disparity between the sorts of voters that vote day of and the sorts of voters who voted by mail. And we know that one sort of vote is going to be tallied quicker than others. We don't know for sure how significant this will be, but there is the possibility that many votes won't be counted until a day or two or possibly longer after the election. And in some places, that might be enough to switch day of results that favor the Republicans to final count results that favor the Democrats once every vote is counted. It's what's being termed the red mirage. The idea short term that Republicans have won, but only because we haven't counted all the votes. Now, a lot of people are worried that Trump will simply say night of, this is what we're going with. I'm bringing it to the Supreme Court. Stop the counting, forget the mail-in ballots, do it day of. This, however, the possibility that he would do that, I have to apologize to the audience. I've been treating it as kind of still a hypothetical that he would do this. And I forgot one of the fundamental rules of American politics, and that is there is always a tweet. Because I had missed this. Back in November of 2018, Trump tweeted in regards to the gubernatorial election in Florida, the Florida election should be called in favor of Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis, in that large numbers of new ballots showed up out of nowhere and many ballots are missing or forged. That's misinformation, but he just puts it in there. An honest vote count is no longer possible. Ballots massively infected must go with election night. He did it. He did it 2 years ago. So is it really crazy to think that he might do it to protect his own seat in November?
Not at all. He's giving you the laid out strategy. I'm telling people now, and I've changed my mind on this, John, because I was on the bandwagon of vote absentee, vote by mail. I'm no longer telling my radio audience that. I'm telling my radio audience, if you can, put on your mask and go to a voting precinct. I'm saying that because it is obvious to me that this president is going to utilize the difference in voting to try and legally invalidate the election. Mm-hmm. That is the plan. I think the tier one lawsuit, the first lawsuit that you will see, is going to be the lawsuit to invalidate votes that come in 3 days after the election. As you know, there's a federal court ruling that says if you put your ballot in the mail and it gets to the precinct up to 3 days after the election, that vote can be counted. I think that will be the first challenge. I think the second challenge will be ballots that were sent to individuals without their request. We have a county right here in Metro Atlanta, DeKalb County. They didn't wait for you to say, hey, send me a ballot. They said, we're sending every single registered voter a ballot, period. If you're in our system, you get a ballot. You don't have to request it. Well, the Secretary of State in Georgia immediately came after the CEO of that county, okay? Because he says this is going to create massive voter fraud. Once again, creating the narrative to invalidate those votes.
Yeah, you're 100% right. We have to remember that, like, we sort of take it for granted that everyone should vote, but that is not a feeling that is shared equally across the political spectrum. Right. But you're right. They're just going to happen. They're 100% going to happen. Some of the other stuff we can debate. We can debate how significant the 50,000 strong goon squad that the Republicans are going to deploy to intimidate voters. How much of an effect is that going to have? But a lot of this is just 100% going to happen. And literally, as I said that, I read a comment from Malcolm that says, John, you say 100% a lot. Yeah, I do.
But if it's 100, it's 100, John.
Yeah, exactly. But you could not be more right. So just bear in mind, he's already said it, and he said it to protect someone else. He has no real empathy for anyone else. It's all reserved for him. So he will do anything to protect himself. Now, one other aspect of this that I do want to talk about, I want to talk about Mitt Romney, because I haven't gotten a chance to talk with Rashad yet about the fact that Mitt came out and said, I'm not going to be that third Republican vote against putting a replacement for RBG in place. Again, reminder, three wouldn't even be enough to stop it anyway, but he could have been that Republican senator that he implied he would be, the one who's willing to go against Donald Trump. When you saw that he'd come out and said that he would vote to confirm a new justice, were you at all surprised by that?
Not really. I was hoping that he would stick to his guns, not because of the vote. I think he would agree with the Supreme Court nominee, but because of the process. Remember, Lindsey Graham and other Republicans changed the rules back in 2016, right? They said, here are the new rules. And these new rules said that an election year president cannot get a hearing on a Supreme Court nominee. And then they said, use our words against us. Mm-hmm. If there's a Republican president and it's an election year, use our words against us. But these are the new rules. And Mitt Romney was cool with those new rules, right? He supported those new rules. I was hoping, based on that intellectual integrity alone, that he would say, I may actually support the nominee based on my conservative values, but because of what we did in 2016, I will reserve my vote until after the election. He didn't do that. Yeah. He went ahead and you know, he surprised a lot of people, but I knew it was, there's still political play inside of this guy.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, there was a chance. I think it was like 20%, maybe.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So Mitt Romney, who just a couple of days ago, here's the update for you. And it's gonna make him look great. So just a couple of days ago, he said, I know what we said about the court and everything, but like, I really want a Supreme Court justice. So we're kind of gonna get, we're gonna take one, and I'm gonna give Trump that justice. After the no peaceful transfer comment from Trump, this is what Mitt Romney decided to tweet. Fundamental to democracy is the peaceful transition of power. Without that, there is Belarus. Any suggestion that a president might not respect this constitutional guarantee is both unthinkable and unacceptable. And if he tries to get the court to give him the election, I will give him whatever justice he wants to make sure that that happens. That is right. That's what he's doing.
That's basically what he's saying, right?
Yeah. He's saying this president is going to steal this thing, and that's unacceptable. So unacceptable that I can't wait to give him a justice who he is definitely interviewing for that.
Yeah. 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 Mitt needs, Mitt needs to find himself. Okay. Mm-hmm. He really needs to find himself. Obviously, his colleagues, the vast majority of them, they are all gone. I mean, they're just out there. They are on the Trump, you know what. Okay. Mitt Romney was the one guy who gave the rest of us some hope that everybody wasn't part of the cult in the Republican Party. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I do find it fascinating that while he's outraged by a comment that Trump has pretty much made before, yeah, that he's willing to give Trump exactly the tools to do what he says he disagrees with.
Exactly. It's like, you know, the idea that Trump could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone is an appalling comment. Hold on, let me finish loading this. Here, Trump, here, take this gun.
Exactly right.
That's what he's doing. And I get it, I agree with you. He does need to find himself. It just, I don't want us to have to be a part of it. He should go eat, pray, love in some other country and leave US government because he's a waste of space. Yesterday, live during the show, we got an initial indication that there had been some kind of charge in the killing of Breonna Taylor. I foolishly, naively thought that it was an incredibly light charge, but that I thought it was still a charge that had something to do with her killing. And I was, of course, in hindsight, wrong. And it wasn't. And we got even less of a thing that looks like justice than I thought. So understand that activists, celebrities, and everyday Americans have been calling for charges since Breonna Taylor, an emergency medical worker, was shot multiple times by white officers after one of them was shot while bursting into her home during a narcotics investigation back in March. The officers had a no-knock warrant, but the investigation showed they announced themselves before entering, according to the AG. Now, like 11 people that lived in the building said they didn't hear anything. One person said they heard something. So maybe something was said, but it seems like it was muttered under their breath. In any event, a grand jury, after 6 months, returned three charges of wanton endangerment Wednesday against fired officer Brett Hankinson over shooting into a home next to Taylor's with people inside. I foolishly thought it was endangering her life, but it wasn't even about that. Rashad, I mean, what do you make of this?
The term miscarriage of justice isn't even strong enough to apply here. What the attorney general has done is criminal himself. So let me first take the veil away from this guy because he comes out, he blames everything on the grand jury. Here's how that process works, John, and to the entire audience, and many people are aware. He puts the charge on the paper, okay? He's the guy who researched with his staff some legal statute that nobody freaking gets prosecuted on called wanton endangerment, right? Nobody gets prosecuted on this stuff. He finds it, he presents it before a grand jury. He doesn't present the other elements where statutorily it would apply, such as, and I researched the Kentucky law, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, and reckless homicide all meets what we call disjunctive and conjunctive elements of the statute. He chose not to even present that to the grand jury for them to give him a true bill or an indictment. The fix was in from day one. The fix was in. And then the other crime that took place, which was the officer who obtained the warrant, lied to a judge and said, well, we saw suspicious packages coming from the United States Postal Service. Well, the postmaster said, well, we're going to investigate that. They did their investigation, a federal investigation, and they said, no suspicious packages whatsoever. Now that's being investigated, but what did this spineless AG do? Instead of using his jurisdictional authority and investigating that potential crime, he hands it over to the FBI, right? Because he doesn't want to actually prosecute cops, period. And this whole wanton endangerment thing, it's what I call a de facto misdemeanor. The reason why I call it a de facto misdemeanor, even though it's a Class D felony, is because the minimum sentence is 1 year. And that 1 year can be 1 year probation. You know what you get 1 year probation for, John? For a city code violation of your commercial property. For speeding and you can't pay the speeding ticket right away. They will give you 1 year probation to do that. So this is a de facto misdemeanor. And I promise you, whoever sentences this guy, if he even gets convicted, will give him the light end of that sentence.
You know, I again, as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, I'm glad that we have you on because you not only understand this, but you can communicate it far better than I can. Everybody needs to understand everything that you said there is accurate. I would argue that strategy that was pursued by the AG is why the AG was involved in it. And look, you laid out all of the ways that it was sort of purposefully designed to fail or to succeed in getting this particular charge. Trump was asked about this yesterday and he called the AG brilliant. To give you an idea of what we should think of this, Trump loved it. So a little bit more detail, the counts pertain to Hankinson, one of the three officers allegedly firing blindly through a door and window with bullets entering an adjacent apartment where a pregnant woman, a man and a child were home, according to the state attorney general. As I said on the main show yesterday, Hankinson's mistake in this case was firing near someone and not killing them because that gets you a worse charge as a cop than actually killing someone apparently. He should have killed everyone in the apartment, then he'd walk free. The two other cops, Mattingly and Cosgrove, will face no charges whatsoever. No charges. They were justified in their use of force because Taylor's boyfriend fired at officers first. And as friend of the show, Jordan Yule pointed out, Breonna Taylor's neighbor's walls got more justice than Breonna Taylor herself.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And let me say this about, you know, everybody saying, well, the officers were fired upon, so they have the right to fire back. That's a legal defense theory. That is a theory of the defense, meaning if you meet the qualification for violating the statute, we get that you say you had an excuse for violating the statute, but let's argue that in the court of law. So we're not citing doctrine here. We're not citing statute. We're talking about a theory of defense as if the prosecution is supposed to somehow be your defense attorney at the same time. This is not how it works for regular citizens. John, do you know how many regular citizens have committed a crime and they believe there's a justification for that crime and the prosecution doesn't care? Here's the other thing. When you present to the grand jury as a prosecutor, you don't have to present an adversarial case. It's not an adversarial procedure. It's just what you want them to know about. I spoke earlier today on my show with the former DA, the elected district attorney of DeKalb County, one of the great prosecutorial minds of this state. He's now a legal defense attorney. And he laid out how basically the AG has the ability to put on stand the one person who said, oh yeah, absolutely, I heard the police, and then not put on stand the 11 who said, I heard nobody at all. You don't have to present a case of every part in a grand jury proceeding. This AG and his team decided to present a case that was favorable to one element of the statute, and that's this endangerment bull.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, like, it's amazing how your Second Amendment rights, which for many right wingers the most important right, it's basically you can get rid of the rest of the Bill of Rights, doesn't matter, you got the second, it's always been to protect you against this out of control government, protect your home, protect your property, protect your family. You're supposed to be able to do that, but it always seems super contingent on what race you are. So yep. For any other right winger, if somebody began battering down their door to break in and possibly kill their family, they would begin spraying the windows with their AK-47. But in this case, firing a shot is a death sentence,
right?
Because they ended up being black, of course. When you defend yourself, you know, stand your ground only applies if you are at least as pale as me. That is very clear nationally. We understand that. Yeah. You know, when police forces are dressing in plain clothes, driving around in Kia minivans and kidnapping protesters off the streets, you're just supposed to go along with that. God help you if you fight back against what every normal human would think was a kidnapping attempt. You'll go to jail for the rest of your life if you fight the cops while doing that. So all of this talk about the Second Amendment being used to protect life, liberty, and property, and to stop an out of control tyrannical government, now is being twisted to justify whatever state violence they feel is necessary to strike out against racial minorities, against protesters they find inconvenient. That has shifted very quickly now that they have control of virtually every branch of government.
Well, the basis of it is the race element, right? Because as you just said, if Breonna Taylor's boyfriend or fiance would have been a white male licensed gun carrier as he was, and he said, hey, somebody was breaking into my house and I shot back. Do you realize how many people from the conservative right would be defending him? How many gun owners would be defending him? Where's the NRA? This man is a licensed gun owner who exercised his right. Where's the NRA on him? Nowhere to be found, because he has the wrong complexion for their narrative.
100%, 100%. Michael Myers says, how likely do you think people are going to become violent at polling places? Don Jr. has called for a Trump supporter army to observe the polls. Yeah, yeah. Some people have hypothesized that hypothetically, if you wanted to send a couple of Proud Boys to one of these places and start a brawl, that fight could then be used as justification to shut down the polling place, hypothetically. I don't know. These are the sorts of things that we have no idea how likely it is.
Let me tell you how that works, because we've had that happen a couple of times in precincts around the country. And typically the local jurisdiction, there's a board of election. They have to supervise the integrity of that election or that precinct. If there's a disruption, and we've had disruptions because of fighting, technology breakdowns, and other things, that board of elections, they are supposed to extend the time frame for voting that same day. So let's say if the disruption created a 3-hour delay and polls closed at 7 p.m., well, that precinct will not close until 10 p.m. based on the standing protocol.
Yeah. Should do that. They
should
do that.
Should, right.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. And all these, you know, like long lines and all of that. We live in the richest country in the history of riches or countries. But every election, we have these long lines. I can't think of a potential solution. How could you possibly make the lines quicker? I don't know. No one's been able to figure it out. Maybe someday Elon Musk will work on it. But until then, we just can't fix it. America, the best democracy in the world.
Right. We can't fix long lines for voting, right? The number one most sacred element of a democracy is the vote, the electorate, making sure people can participate in this activity known as voting. We can put a man on the moon. We can do all these other great and amazing things, but we can't increase our capacity in order to limit these lines. And here's the truth of the matter, John. Have you ever heard somebody argue before the Congress You know, it would be a great idea to go to war with Iran, but it's just not in the budget. We never have a budget issue when it comes to killing people, blowing things up, going to war. But all of a sudden, every time we talk about securing our election, making sure democracy works, increasing the capacity by way of additional funding, we have a debate. We don't need a debate for this. We need to have this money flowing to increase capacity, decrease the lines, make it easier and more accessible for every American to participate in their God-given right to choose or not choose who represents them in this America.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I just want to amend one of my past comments just a little bit. I said that America has lines. Sorry, certain communities have lines, because I've lived and voted in Storrs, Connecticut, Austin, Texas, and in Culver City, LA. And I can usually get in and out in about 5 minutes. And I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence. Some places have long lines.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we don't fight against it. Maybe that's why we allow it to continue.
Yep.
Okay, related to that, let's transition now into our next topic. What is the cost of racism in America? Now, there's a billion different ways that you can quantify it, and there's a lot of great research and you know, scholarly output to do that. But let's talk about one particular way. What is the economic cost to America for continuing the centuries-long history of racial economic inequality? So a study has looked into it, and here's what they found. Black workers have lost $113 billion in potential wages just over the past two decades because they couldn't get a college degree. That's not everything. That's not all of the economic inequality generated by racism. That's just specifically for two decades, the more difficulty getting a college degree. The housing market has lost $218 billion in sales because black applicants couldn't get home loans. About $13 trillion in business revenue never flowed into the economy because black entrepreneurs couldn't access bank loans. The US could have $5 trillion in gross domestic product over just the next 5 years if those gaps and others were closed today, according to the study. That is amazing. And for many Americans, they'll think, that's a cost that I'm willing to pay. I like the way that things have worked. I like the status quo. But these figures are amazing, Rashad.
They are. You know, there's a sociologist, I forget his name, but he made this calculation and he said 92% of the social ills we face in America would evaporate if this country could do one thing: make sure every American had a job that paid the bills. Well, that's basically your end product, right? Having a job that pays the bills. What's behind that? The statistics that you just named: having access to affordable higher education, being skilled and trained in a particular industry. Well, you have all of these barriers to get to that point. Yeah. And then in the process of you getting to this point of higher education, being trained, you're spending money, you're taking out loans, and you're getting degreed in areas that don't want to hire you. And so you're taking other jobs. Now you fall behind on paying back your student loan. You find you a honey, right? You got your boo thing. You have a child now. You're trying to get a house. You can't get a house. Why can't you get a house? Because the industry that you are skilled in didn't hire you. So you're working at a job that pays you well under what you deserve. You're not making a livable wage. And because of the student loan debt that has accrued, you can't get a house now. It is a cause and effect relationship from day one. All right, from day one. And it particularly has an impact on every person of color. And my second doctoral degree, John, is actually in higher education access for African American students.
Yeah, you know, you're totally right. All these things tie together and they produce this outcome, which, like, in such a perverted way, racists support a system that stops people of a variety of races getting to the point that they say they want everyone to be like, to lead this sort of life. And then they hate these groups for not having access to those resources, for not owning their homes, for not whatever, like all of those things. It's so sick, the world that they work to produce, they say they hate. And I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit, because I'm gonna summarize a few more numbers here. Federal Reserve data shows that white households' net worth grew 43% to $61,200 between 1995 and 2016, so over a 20-year period, while it remained flat at $35,400 for black families. In terms of home ownership, back in 2019, 44% of black households owned their homes, compared with 74% of white households. So some people will look at those numbers and just think, well, how do you get to this? I would just gesture to the country. This is how you get to this. Our policies that have to do with access to loans, to educational opportunity, to all of these things, that is how you produce this. And if you go back to the first graphic that we showed you, it is obviously hurting black Americans, that they are the principal, those who are suffering as a result of this. But it also has an economic impact on the country. How much could everyone collectively benefit of all races if we were able to get past this problem? But we've apparently decided that it's just not worth it.
Yeah, we have concluded, and when I say we, I'm talking about this country. This country has concluded that there just must be a permanent underclass in order for their version of capitalism to survive. The truth is, capitalism can't survive without a permanent underclass. The only issue would be that those that are making the absolute most money, they may take somewhat of a profit loss, but we can all rise on this ship together. Equity is the conversation, not equality. And I actually teach a course at the university called Dr. King as a Social Change Agent. And I highlight Dr. King after 1964. We don't like to talk about Dr. King after 1964, because after 64, King did an interview and he was asked about his I Have a Dream speech. And he said during this interview, and anyone can pull it up on YouTube, he said that speech is now a nightmare. And he talked about how equality is a courtesy, and he wanted what's called genuine equality. And he gave an example. He said it's one thing to sit where you want to sit at a restaurant. It's another thing to own the restaurant. He was talking about equitable principles. That's why the Fair Housing Act was such a big deal. That was about equitable principles and having a piece of the American pie beyond just the courtesy. And let's talk about just for a moment the entire issue of the Civil Rights Act. You know, gave an influx of money to white America like you haven't seen. Okay, because black individuals took their green dollars and spent it at white establishments. It was a win for white America. Now we need a win also for black America. And I don't besmirch the Civil Rights Act of 1964, because it did allow people who were discriminated against because they were black to sue major companies and get rewarded, and policies were changed. So it definitely had an impact. But let's be clear, the acts that were passed still had some level of benefit to the white male dominated social structure.
100%. Again, so glad to have you.
You know all this stuff, that's great. I love the show.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And as you're saying that, I brought up, I wanna watch that interview after this. This morning, Donald Trump went to pay his respects, or what passes for his respects, to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her casket at the Supreme Court. And here's a little bit of video of how the assembled American masses responded to his presence there. Yeah, so after a few seconds of those protesters, they decided to leave. They shouted, vote him out. They also shouted, respect her wish, honor her wish, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter says their dying wish was to not be replaced by Donald Trump. That apparently is controversial to Republicans. Seems like the most obvious thing I could possibly imagine is that this woman would not want her life's work turned completely upside down by him putting some troglodyte on the Supreme Court designed to undo everything that she's worked towards. But anyway, Rashad, what do you think about that? Trump, he was actually wearing a mask, by the way, while he was visiting that. That was a novel change. I didn't expect that.
Right, that was something protesters told him to do, by the way. Right, protesters were saying wear mask, and he was saying don't wear mask. So he obviously listened to their logic. As soon as I saw that, John, I said to myself, he brought this on himself. Mm-hmm. All of that he brought on himself. This is the kind of leader he wanted to be, all right? I don't feel bad for the guy. And the protesters are well within, and we say protesters, man, these are just regular Americans, just man. These are Americans who are simply fed up. Do you know how many people are protesting right now who never believed they would ever be protesting ever anything? All right.
Yeah.
These are American citizens. And I think sometimes we marginalize them in conversation when we only say protesters. These are American citizens who are protesting because they are outraged by the leadership of this president and by the policy stance he's taken on many issues.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, if he doesn't want people to follow him everywhere he goes and, you know, chant at him, maybe stop saying that like the coronavirus deaths in blue states don't count. Like if you want to be the respected president of all Americans, stop saying that blue states don't count.
Right, but he's not interested in that. He was never interested in being president of a United States. He was only interested in being president of his base. He figured that out quickly. It's almost like a boardroom, right? You have the board of directors and you have 12 members on the board of directors. Well, 7 of them keep you there. And instead of being a board chair of the entire board, he decided to be the board chair of just those 7 people. And that's his political base.
Yeah, you're 100% right. One more comment on the mask. It is surprising to see him wearing it, but I have figured it out. I don't think it reflects a newfound respect for the threat of COVID having a resurgence in the fall. I think considering the chance that were coming his way, it soaks up the tears really quickly.
You
think so they're not as visible.
You gotta have a soul to have tears, John. Come on.
That's true. Maybe he's crying on the inside. I don't know if he's capable of that. Anyway, look, I wanted to mention one other thing having to do with RBG though, and that is Ted Cruz, noted weenie. He blocked a Senate resolution having to do with RBG, objecting to mention of her dying wish to keep the seat open for the next president. So he didn't want the fact that she told her daughter that she doesn't want to be replaced by Trump going into it. So he had a problem with that. So he's blocking the entire thing. And he had this to say: "We are sadly seeing one side of the aisle embrace more and more radical and dangerous proposals, including trying to use brute political force to politicize the court. That is not consistent with the Constitution." You know what he thinks is consistent with the Constitution? Blocking Hillary Clinton's Supreme Court nominees indefinitely. Literally forever, that's what he said before the election. If she wins, she never gets a Supreme Court justice. That's what this little cream-filled worm said back in 2016. But now, packing the court, that would be unconstitutional, even though it's not. It's literally the Constitution doesn't say anything about how many people are supposed to be there. In 2016, he said there's historical precedent for less than 9 judges. Maybe 8 is the right number. That's what he said to justify his radical plan to stop a democratically elected president from ever having a Supreme Court justice. But now, I mean, come on, we got to respect the norms, Rashad. Let's not talk about doing anything drastic here.
Ted Cruz, once again, defying medical science by standing upright with absolutely no backbone. All right, remember when this guy let Donald Trump talk trash about his wife? Remember that? Mm-hmm. And he looked at the camera and Ted Cruz says, "Now, Donald, you're gone too far." And he did this whole, you know, fake Texas thing and then was all on the guy's jockstrap after it was evident he was going to be president of the United States. As far as I'm concerned, Ted Cruz is a big nothing. And he says that this is contrary to the Constitution. To me, the way he let Trump talk about his wife and then decided to get on Trump's team is contrary to being a husband and a good man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right. It was absolutely pathetic. You don't get to be, I know you're a Republican, so you think of yourself as like an alpha male. Dude, you're the most pathetic guy literally in the country.
And I wonder how his wife felt about that whole thing, John. I mean, obviously, he's probably still sleeping on the couch, right?
Maybe. I mean, I guess it's not much payback, but the knowledge that every time he looks in his wife's eye, he's wondering if she's thinking about that. That's something. Something is.
Yeah.
You're totally right. It is bizarre that he's one of the few creatures in nature that can stand without a spine. Right. But look, even a candle, which is as much wax as Ted Cruz stands up with just a wick. So I guess that's how it works.
Yeah.
I will just say this. I don't live in Texas anymore, but if you have a lead on the right nominee for 2024 to take him down, he needs to go. Yeah. His smarmy, smug look made even worse by his pathetic beard. I can't take it. I don't want it. We need to prepare now for 4 years in the future to get him the hell out of there.
I'll let you know as soon as we find a fittable candidate.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Get do it. And if there's anything I can do to help, that's all I want. All I want.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.